The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.
Rational discussion, common sense, open debate. RCR, Reality Check Radio with Paul Brennan.
Now to Brad Flutie, who has been on a hunger strike for 71 days. He's lost over 20 kilos, we hear, and is frail. He's been in Spring Hill Prison. And representing Brad Flutie is Sue Gray, lawyer, who joins us now. Morning, Sue.
Good morning, Paul. How are you?
I'm good. How's Brad?
Look, Brad is back in hospital. Mm-hmm. I just have to correct, I'm not actually representing Brad. Brad is representing himself.
Okay,
but
it.
I'm representing Brad's mother, who is a trained nurse and who is extremely concerned about the situation and who now has power of attorney, but doesn't seem to be making too much difference with getting information for her. Yeah, he was admitted again yesterday. There was some electrolyte imbalances that the prison and their medical staff were concerned about. And so that's good news, because we've said all along that he needs to be in a hospital. There are not many New Zealanders that have been on a hunger strike for such a long time.
Mm.
And it's all sort of unknown territory. Brad's pretty tough, but everyone's got their limits. And I'm told that he could die.
If really?
If he's not given proper treatment, he could die, yes.
Has treatment, I won't say been withheld, but you mentioned that people don't have too much experience with this. Has his treatment, for want of a better word, not been handled too well? Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, it's been handled incredibly politically rather than medically, and that's the concern. Brad has been wanting to start feeding again from only just a couple of weeks after he was in hospital. So many weeks ago now, he's been trying to get back onto a proper diet. But the problem is what they call the refeeding. The risk of refeeding is actually quite dangerous, and it needs to be done under full medical supervision. And doing it in hospital where there's limited medical supervision and it's a long way from the hospital is an extremely dangerous way of doing it. So he's been asking all along to go back to hospital with proper supervision from a specialist that understands the issues, probably needs a team of specialists on hand, so that he can actually do it as safely as possible. And even then, it's still really risky. What happened last time he was in hospital, at least two doctors said that he should be admitted and should stay in hospital so he can undergo refeeding. And then an administrator, somebody higher in the echelons, came in and said, no, I'm overriding you. He can go back to jail.
Back up the truck. An administrator overrode a clinical opinion.
Yes, I understand the administrator is also medically trained, but he was in the administration hierarchy as well as being a doctor, and he came in. Now, there's a dispute about the medical records because he says the family called him in. The family say, no, we were happy with the advice that the other doctors gave us that Brad needed to be admitted. It seems, and we still haven't seen all of the medical documentation, it seems that he called himself in and overrode the other doctors and sent Brad back to prison.
And that's the point you're making about political decisions, obviously, that one there. Why would someone do something so risky? I take it that's what you're saying. This is a very risky thing to do.
Exactly. And look, it's almost like Brad is a political prisoner. It just seems to be, I don't understand how any doctor could ethically send a man on a significantly long hunger strike, who'd already lost around 20 kilos of his body weight and who'd had all kinds of issues arising and who wanted to refeed but wanted to refeed safely. I do not understand how he could be sent away from hospital where the doctors wanted to admit him and back to prison, but that is what they did. And it's only yesterday that he finally got sent back to the hospital again, and we still don't know. And his mother, who's his power of attorney for medical purposes, still doesn't know whether he's going to be admitted for the refeeding program that he wants or whether he's going to be sent back to prison yet again. It's just ridiculous. It's dangerous. And this man's life is at risk.
Do you think this is some kind of political prisoner situation? Do you?
Well, it's certainly got that smell. It's got that whiff to it because it doesn't make any sense. Normally doctors, my experience with doctors is they err on the side of caution, the precautionary principles, an unusual situation.
Well, murderers get into hospital, don't they, Sue, when they need it?
Absolutely. Look, everybody's entitled to hospital treatment if they need it. You know, there's a suggestion that Brad is going to run away. Brad is ill, he's frail, he wants medical treatment. Why on earth would he run away? I mean, it's just ridiculous. They're making up things. They're clutching at straws, apparently, to try and justify their own bad decisions. And I don't know why they don't get the courage to step up and say, we're sorry, let's get this fixed, let's give Brad the treatment that he needs and get him healthy again.
They never say sorry, Sue. Why did he begin? Let's get some background on this. I mean, I know generally what's going on. I know many of our listeners have got quite specific knowledge because they've been listening to the shows covering this. But why did Brad begin his hunger strike?
Look, originally he got arrested arising out of going into a bottle shop without a mask. And that led to security guards calling the police. And that led to that incident many people have seen on social media where Brad was tasered and the police say he resisted arrest. And he was charged with the usual array of charges, relatively minor charges. There were a series of processes. There was some confusion about court dates because some of it was in Whangarei and Brad was living further south. It all sprung out of and exploded out of what was relatively a minor incident. I mean, you would have thought the alcohol would have been more risk than not wearing a mask in the first place, let alone this whole series of
things
that have followed.
Yeah.
But anyway, he's now been, as I understand it, and I haven't been involved in his criminal defence, he's been self-representing, but as I understand it, he's been convicted, he's awaiting sentencing. Now, in August, he was already on the hunger strike, and he started the hunger strike because of the way he'd been treated, basically as a protest about the way he'd been treated. He was in hospital for that. The doctors way back then had agreed that he should get admitted to hospital. However, Brad wanted to get his sentencing sorted out, so he went back to Spring Hill Prison so he could attend the video link with the court to get the sentencing sorted out. But he didn't know that for some reason, between the court and the corrections system, they had cancelled that sentencing date. So he actually didn't need to leave prison back then, leave hospital back then, but he wasn't told. And since then, he hasn't been able to get readmitted, and his next court date is not until the 1st of October, which is finally coming around now.
Not
but, you know, he's hoping he's well enough to appear.
How has he been treated, have you heard, day to day by the prison staff in Spring Hill Prison?
Look, it seems like it's been mixed. Some of the prison staff have been very good, I understand, and one of my legal colleagues, Kirsten Murfin's been in to arrange the power of attorney documents, and she said, look, you know, a lot of them are very good. It seems to be yet again in the hierarchy that we're having the problem.
This is all over not wearing a mask, is it?
This is all over not wearing a mask.
Can you freaking believe that? Can you believe that?
And I mean,
it's insane.
Right from the start, the evidence was that the mask did nothing anyway. You know,
I went into places not wearing masks. I could have been in there where he is. I mean, this is just nuts. Yeah,
any of us. I mean, we all had exemptions. Everyone had an exemption if they had read the law, probably. But anyway, people had exemptions. Brad had an exemption. And even with an exemption, it ended him up here. It's absolutely unbelievable.
So he pushed back too much for the authorities. He stood his ground and everything sort of happened from there. And they can't, I'm just trying to map this out, why it's like it is. They can't stand someone pushing back and not sort of kowtowing to the system. So they're trying to break him, it sounds like.
Well, look, that's why I say it's like being a political prisoner. I mean, if you look at it objectively, the man didn't wear a mask in a bottle store 2.5 years ago or whenever it was. Does that ever justify this? Which is why Brad went on his hunger strike in the first place, because he was so unhappy about the way the system had treated him. So It is. Everything seems to be so out of proportion. Now, I was just in court the last couple of days watching the NZ Doctors and Medical Council case.
I was going to ask you about that.
Another example, I don't want to shift from Brad, but it just, the lack, I was astonished. All of the maltreatment of doctors who dared to question the vaccine, which was exactly the right thing to do because MedSafe themselves questioned the safety of the vaccine, and they were absolutely hammered. They were a lot of them were suspended. A lot of them have faced disciplinary proceedings even now. When the medical council was finally in court, they actually had nothing. Nothing. What they said was back in 2021, there was no evidence. No, they said the vaccine was safe. There was no evidence of any harm from the vaccine. And so there was no reason for any doctor to warn any patient about any risk. I think that's what their lawyer summarised it as. Astonishing. That's the New Zealand Medical Council, the body. It's just, and so this is what we've seen time and time again. The reason they seem to push back against those who question them is that there is no evidence to support the, well, call them the bullies. There is no evidence to support the authorities, the establishment, for what they've been doing. And they can't defend themselves. So they overreact and they discriminate, they bully, they harass, they try and shame, they name call. Because that is all they can do to defend their position that is actually indefensible. There was someone in court yesterday, really funny, that the question came up about, well, what is the science and what kind of science are they relying on? And somebody made a comment, political science. And that's the best answer I've heard for a long time.
Not getting too, and we'll get back to Brad before we're done, and that'll be in a minute or two. So how does it look for the medical council? Because we're used to hearing, do I say it, the judiciary or establishment authorities siding with the establishment? What's your reading on how it could go?
Look, I mean, the judge listened carefully. He asked really good questions. In my interpretation, I was just watching the case and taking some notes. My interpretation was that the medical council's conduct is so indefensible and their own case didn't hold together.
Right.
So there has to be some adverse findings against the medical council, and it has to help those doctors that have been so courageous standing up against really what has, in my view, been corruption within their own system, to close down the very thing that doctors are required to do, which is put their patients first and give medical advice based on the risks and benefits for that patient. So they've backed right off this vaccine, so-called, you know, you can't question the vaccine. You're now, according to the medical council, allowed to question, you're allowed to talk about the risks, because of course you were always allowed to talk about the risks. You just can't generically say you're an anti-vaxxer, but this is not what they've been saying all along. Their ground has shifted so far, and it'll be very interesting what Justice Churchman makes of the whole thing.
That's really interesting to hear. Okay, back to Brad just before we wind up. So he's in hospital now. Okay, he's not in a very good way, but his spirits are good, are they?
Look, I haven't spoken to Brad. I've been
speaking
to
his
mother. And she hasn't seen him since in hospital.
Oh, okay.
They're supposed to notify her immediately, and she spent all day toing and froing yesterday trying to find out what on earth was going on.
Can these people get anything right, Sue? Can these people get anything right?
Well, it would be great if they'd even get the basics right, wouldn't it? It would be, but the lack of communication, the medical notes have got some serious errors in them. We've had to make a series of complaints. We get answers back. We actually get answers back within a few days rather than within a few months. So that's kind of one positive, I suppose, out of this whole thing. But it's a very small positive when a man's life is at risk and he's not been getting the treatment. So we really want the hospital to admit him so that he can have a properly supervised refeeding program with the best specialists available, and they may need some international expertise because we haven't had a whole lot of hunger strikers in.
We don't do that, Sue. We don't do that here normally, do we?
No, they know nothing. The overseas experts know nothing. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. Safe and effective, this hunger strike. Okay, well, pass on our regards to everybody involved. And I take it this refeeding program, that's not just a over in a few days. That's a bit of a process, right?
Yeah, it is. It's got to start really gently and it's got to be very, very carefully supervised because I understand the electrolytes and things can go all over the place and that creates all sorts of serious risks of death if it's not done well supervised, which is why he doesn't want it done in the hospital where he's 45 minutes away. Sorry, why he doesn't want it done in the prison where he's 45 minutes away from a hospital and they can't do any secondary treatment. They can't even do IV drips at the prison. It's just ridiculous what's being proposed. The other thing is, you know, he needs this. It's all agreed internationally. Refeeding is a serious risk. It's got to be done under supervision. It's got to be done carefully. And what did the hospital do? They put food in Brad's cell, trying to tempt him to eat in a way that may have killed him.
Oh, man. Okay. Gee.
So this was last week. You know, we've got these ongoing issues. It goes on and on. And all he wants is hospital. Now, hopefully, the administrators, the bureaucrats will stay out of it, let the doctors admit Brad, let him get the treatment he needs, and let his mother stay in constant touch with him and provide all the emotional support that she wants to provide that she's been unable to provide.
Okay. All right, Sue, thanks for coming on this morning and bringing us right up to date on the status of Brad Flutie. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. Do you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to? Either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We'd love to hear from you, so connect with us today.